Matt's on here, and his lovely wife, and Dave and me.
She knows that we're on. She's staring at us. Welcome to The Greaties, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. The focus of today's podcast is 1984's The Neverending Story, directed by Wolfgang Peterson and starring Barrett Oliver, Noah Hathaway, and Tammy Stronach. My name is Dave. Our illustrious panel of experts includes Christy.
Yo.
Matt.
Hello.
And Chris.
Falcor's taint.
And we're off.
Wow.
Here we go.
Wow. And then there's Chris.
So, before we get into the movie, I thought maybe we could go through the four of us and give our past experiences with the movie, like what kind of history you have with this movie, being that it came out July 20th, 1984. Christy, would you like to start?
I actually did not see it in the theaters. We pirated HBO, and so I got it when it hit that.
You shouldn't say those cable companies are ruthless. They'll still track you down, even this all this time later.
It was a tin can on the side of the house that somehow got the waves from the mountain next to us. And so I really don't think they could prove anything.
Okay.
So I saw it, and then every time it would be on HBO, I would like time it so that I could see it. But I was telling Matt when we were watching it, there were so many things that really just kind of freaked me out about it, like the Gmork and the horse dying. And since he hadn't seen it before, it was kind of interesting.
How about you, Matt?
Well, as Christy just spoiled for everybody, this is the first time I saw it because she just blurted out since I had never seen it
before. Sorry, edit that out.
Well, now knowing that it's from 1984, now I guess. I wasn't 13 yet. I was, on the verge of being 13. That's probably why I didn't see it. Because it seemed like something my parents would have taken me to. But I was probably trying to be a little more avoiding the G movies at that age. So I could see why I didn't see that. Oh, I did see the second one, which I don't know why. I was probably drunk.
You're probably the only person that's seen the second one and not the first.
Yeah, you're probably right. Huh. So, yeah. And I don't even remember much from the second one except... it was a kid from Sequest.
And Free Willy.
Was it really?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all I remember about the second. So, yeah, this is the first time I saw it.
Hmm. Chris?
I don't remember seeing it in theaters, but I remember seeing it probably like she did, like on HBO or Prism, one of those channels. I did see it a lot, though, because the song was like constantly playing in my head, like nonstop, from that day until today.
And for the rest of the week. Yeah, we're going to talk about the song later. The song's the whole... character into
it. Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. As for me, I think like a couple of us, I was a devout George Lucas, Steven Spielberg disciple. And if it wasn't Star Wars and it was something like this, I was vehemently against it. This kind of crap wasn't going to fly with me when I was 11, because I knew better and I had seen better. So as a kid, I pushed this movie away, and I probably did see it, but this was not something I was going to get into because it wasn't going to cut the mustard with me, no matter what, even if it wasn't great. And I had a totally different experience seeing it this time and seeing it with my young son. So having that that new wrinkle gave me a whole new experience. So we can talk about that a little more as we talk about this.
Okay.
So getting into the movie, as soon as Le Mal is done with his performance, the first character you see then is Bastion. And it's really the only time he wakes up from a dream, and you see a picture of his mother behind him. And then he goes and you meet his dad, who is the only actual celebrity, I guess, if you want to call him that, in this movie.
Simon and Simon.
Yes, his major dad, Gerald McCraney.
I went through the whole movie before realizing that. Christy pointed it out, like, the very end.
Well, it's because for one point, he wasn't wearing a hat or being Southern.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give
everything else, he's had a twang, but he was talking like this. Bastion, it's time to go to school.
Yeah.
And it was so weird.
And he's a dick.
He is. He leaves his kid. He goes, all right, I'm going to work. See ya. And just walks out the door.
I'm just going to put an egg in my orange juice and go.
Yeah. I don't know what he was drinking, but it looked horrible. And he's kind of a jerk to Bastion. He basically tells him, get your head out of the clouds. I know your mother just died, but you got to get over that.
Grow a pair of balls and get up and out the door, go to school, learn math, dickhead.
And join the swim team. You know, it's like... Poor Bastion. I mean,
eat your Wonder Bread with the Skippy peanut butter, and I'll pour you a cup.
That was a big ass can too.
Did you see how big that was? Big block of butter.
I missed the butter. No, I missed
the
butter.
There's a huge, like, you could do like close encounters with that butter. It's huge.
I did notice a nice huge can of Sanka in the background too. That was nice.
So, I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, some of these like 80s anachronisms are going to be funny to see if we continue to do these 80s movies. Although there wasn't many in this because most of the but took place in Fantasia.
Oh.
Which I don't know how they get off calling it something that already existed, but whatever. So he leaves the house, and you're supposed to assume, based on this one scene, that he's bullied by these kids who don't look to be that tough, but, you know, throw him in the trash.
The one thing I got to say is, what time of day did they start school that he had that much time to bully? It's like, oh, we don't go to school till noon.
No. I think those kids were pretty tough, man, because they had like proton pack sized backpacks.
They were huge. They were like little people with backpacks.
They got some working out walking to school. Or either that or they got some, you know, scoliosis.
Life.
One of them actually reminded me, the one that pounds on top of the dumpster looked like just like the face of one of those kids from Karate Kid.
He did. Like, I noticed
yeah,
that.
Kick him, Johnny. Yeah. I'm like, God, that's what he looked like 10 maybe, years before.
Maybe it was him. He had a career of playing a bully. Well, then a major plot point happens. He's running away from them, and he ducks into this creepy bookstore with this pederast who's reading this book. I mean, it's like the creepiest guy you've ever seen in your life. And the kid just goes right up to him. I mean, you can tell what kind of parenting he's getting at home. He's just going up to this guy. And he gives him this speech. And Bastion says how he knows books. And he goes into how, you know, maybe you've been Captain Nemo, maybe you've been Tarzan, but you've never seen a book like this. And he goes on and on and on about this book and how he can't have it because it's not safe. And the phone rings, and he covers it up with a piece of newspaper. And that's supposed to stop Bastion from stealing this book.
Right.
So the question that I have, this is one of my first major questions in the book. Is this creepy bookstore guy trying to talk Bastion into taking the book? Or is he really trying to talk him out of taking it? Because there's a scene where he does take it, and the guy's looking from his office, and he's got this really creepy smile on his face. Like he's happy that the kid took the book. I was wondering what you guys thought. Do you think that he was trying to talk him into taking it, almost like a forbidden fruit thing, like, don't take this, but he really wanted him to?
Yeah, that's what I got out of it. It's like some of the worst scripted reverse psychology scenes and dialogue I've ever seen, maybe. But yeah, I think that's how I took it.
Well, I actually read the book.
Okay.
I read The Neverending Story, because it was a book before it was a movie.
Sit back. This is going to take a while, I think.
Shut up.
Did we mention in the beginning that Christy and I are married? Because that might be important to the audience halfway through this.
No, yeah. I didn't know if you wanted that information out there for the world to hear.
I don't.
Yeah, I'm too old to start over again.
I would like it not. I would like it stricken from the record, please.
Edit that out.
Chris and I are not married.
No. Not today.
Not to each other.
No.
But actually, the bookstore is it, and the guy in the bookstore were magical in the book.
Oh.
They weren't there later.
Oh.
So.
Spoiler.
You gonna read this book, Chris?
No.
Yeah.
And never.
It's got more than two pages.
Never.
Oh.
I don't read. I'll be honest.
It's got no pictures.
Oh, man. It's a kid's book and has no pictures.
If it's not the TV guide, I don't read it.
So, okay. So in the book, the guy was really there to get him to read the book.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he's so important to this.
Yes.
To this story. All right. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know if it was supposed to be that way or if it was, you know, just bad acting, which is probably both.
Oh, both.
So he gets to school and he starts reading the book. And you're set up with these other characters who don't have a whole lot to do with the story, but it was almost like they were trying to make action figures out of these people. There's the Rock Biter, who I'm confused to whether or not he's a cannibal. I mean, he's made of rocks and eating rocks.
Good point.
I don't know.
He's sentient, and the rocks aren't.
Oh. Well, I should have read the book.
Man, she is the brains of this whole podcast.
I know. I'm just, yeah.
That's really sad.
Come back to that. It's no fun when you go right towards science, or, I mean, you know, right towards a moral argument.
Well, I could go back to my other note.
I mean, we're going to talk about those little, you know, rabbit turd-sized pellets when he, you know, move his bowels. But you went right to the whole psychology of the matter.
Okay, so I did wonder if he had rock farts, but that was...
And boulder shits.
I was trying to be somewhat intelligent.
Why try?
Sorry.
Why bother? We're talking about the never-ending story. And then there's there's Teeny Weeny, who is an Indian man who rides a racing snail with the worst dubbing in the history of movies.
Yes.
I mean, this guy is Indian. He's probably speaking Farsi or something like that. And they have the whitest voiceover in history for this guy. Let's go get her.
Golly gee.
It's so bad.
Yeah, it was at that point of the movie. I was wondering if this was... I mean, I know the whole German... Well, I didn't know it, but I saw it on IMDb. You know, the German director is filmed in Munich and all that stuff. I was like, wait a minute. Is this a freaking German movie that's overdubbed? Because I don't think I could sit through 2 hours of bad overdubbing.
It's really distracting.
What's that?
It's really distracting with that guy.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But I guess I saw then, you know, in the end, or further along, I should say, not in the end. It wasn't. But man, yeah, when that came out, I was like, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sit through all this.
Yeah, it's bad. And the other character is the Night Hob, who looks a little bit like Gene Wilder to me. And he's very strange and dirty. And I read in the preparation of trying to talk about this that there's a scene where he curses in that scene when the Rock Biter is bulldozing everything. He curses, and they cut it out of the movie. So I kind of would like to see that scene of the Night Hob cursing at the Rock Biter, but that was cut out.
Oh. Was he cursing in English or German?
I don't know.
Nine!
That's not a curse word.
I know. It's a number.
Yeah, well, you can't argue with that.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, no.
So he tells him about the nothing. And I was also confused by this. So maybe Christy, having read the book and... shed some light on this. So there's the nothing, which as soon as I hear it, it just reminds me of Seinfeld. Like, this is a movie about nothing. But he talks about the nothing coming and just taking things away. And they give a better description later about the nothing. But after that, you end up going to this ivory tower where the childlike empress is presiding. But you don't get to see her. You get to see this guy. I think his name's Chiron or Kron. He looks like a combination of Mace Windu and Kyoto Mundi from Star Wars. He's like, he's like two guys put together. And he lets everyone know that the Empress is dying. There's a bunch of creatures there. Some of them are actually pretty cool. For 1984 special effects, some of the stuff I thought was actually half decent. There's these two Easter Island-looking heads that look really cool.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, that the ivory tower kind of looks like it should be painted on the side of a van with a porthole.
It does.
With a wizard on the side.
I was thinking of a Valkyrie with a guitar, with an axe guitar.
Yeah.
I actually noticed in all the news on creatures, and you go back and watch it, I could have sworn on the right-hand corner, I swear it looked just like 3PO, Ewoks, and number 5. I swear to God. I even paused it to like look at it, and they looked just like the actual like shadowettes of them. Go back and watch it. Seriously.
Are you sure?
I am 2% sure.
2%?
I'm going to take your word on that. I'm not going to sit through this movie again.
What really, really kind of almost made me a little ashamed is I think I was thinking like Chris when I was watching the movie, that the ivory tower is very yonic.
Mm.
Not phallic, but yonic. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, oh God, I'm thinking like Chris.
that's a good thing.
Everything's a private part.
That's okay. Oh, yeah, you ain't seen nothing. Wait till they go past the first gate, then I'll talk.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'll wait for that one.
So the guy comes out, and they've summoned now the hero of the movie, Atreyu.
He was handsome, by the way.
Atreyu, and the actor's name's Noah Hathaway. I looked him up. He's still a pretty good-looking guy. He's got a faux hawk and tattoos, and he owns like a tattoo parlor or something like that. But as far as kids go and acting in movies, I think he's pretty good. And I don't know how you guys felt, but I think Atreyu's actually pretty cool.
Was cool.
He didn't bother me. You're right about kid actors. They can be hit or miss. He was pretty good. And about, I don't know, maybe a half hour into his scene, or since he'd shown up, it was bugging the hell out of me what I knew him from, and I had to look it up too. And I saw that he was the kid, the only kid character in the original Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
So I was like, okay, so now that I was distracted, I could pay attention more. But yeah, I could stand watching him. He's actually really good, especially when you get, we're not there yet, but in the swamp scene, that was actually a pretty,
heavy scene.
Emotion. Yeah, it's a heavy scene for a kid to pull
exactly.
off.
Thank you.
And that's actually pretty soon, but especially when you put him next to Bastion, the scenes back and forth. I mean, he buries that kid as far as ability and talent and anything. So he was pretty cool. They also do this thing, and they start it right about then. Bastion's reading, and Atreyu and his horse Artex are eating. So the kid, Bastion goes, "That's a great idea." So he decides he's going to eat too. They do this a couple of times through the movie. They eat at the same time. They cry at the same time. They shout at the same time. They see each other in the mirror, which we'll get to. There's a storm in both places, and they set up this kind of parallel universe between these two boys, and that's the first time that I really remember them doing that. And it's kind of clever. I mean, it's really your first clue that Bastion has something more to do with this than just a kid reading a book,
right?
I don't know.
When they started to hint at that, I was like, oh, now I really never understood the concept of the title. I'm like, never ending story, but it obviously. End because it's not like it's. I knew it wasn't. I don't even know how to describe it. I just didn't get the title. Now I kind of do. I was like, okay, with this magic book, or if it's, I'm assuming it's magic. You know, the kids start, their lives start to intertwine. They start to, cross over and see each other. And I finally, 20-30 years later, got the concept of the book. Not that it bothered me for the past 30 years, but I always wondered what the heck the title meant.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense when you're thinking about it. But that pretty much leads up to the scene that you were talking about, Matt. He goes to try and find Morla, the ancient one. It's supposed to be the wisest creature in all of Fantasia. And he has to walk through the swamps of sadness, they're called. If you're overtaken by sadness, you will sink into the swamps. It's probably, to me, one of the two best scenes in the movie. And watching it today, like Christy said, it's pretty heavy. I mean, it's a kid, his best friend, who happens to be a horse, gets sad. I don't know if horses get sad, but this one does. And sinks into the mud. It's horrible.
Did anyone here cry during that scene?
No, I was close, but I didn't.
Did you?
I mean, me neither.
I wasn't close at all.
That's the first time I cried in the movie. I'll be honest.
Man, another time?
Did you say first time?
First time, yeah. I cried twice. And my daughter is my witness. I did cry.
But yeah, I mean, not only did the kid do well, but that look on the horse, and the horse's, the eyes widening on the horse is what really was like, oh my god, that
Matt,
poor
Matt,
horse.
Stop.
Do you need a tissue?
I might. I'll be back.
It's okay, it's only a movie.
Yeah.
It's fiction. Fictional.
I'm better.
It's a great scene. It's a really great scene. And the kid does it so well. He goes from pleading with the horse to not be sad to screaming at him and calling him stupid. It's really a good scene. The kid is awesome. I read online that it's one of several times that this kid, Noah Hathaway, almost died making this movie.
Oh my god, really?
Jeez.
I guess there was an elevator lowering the horse into the mud.
Okay. I did wonder. That's cool you found that out.
Right. His leg, the kid's leg, got stuck on the elevator. It drug him down underneath. They finally got it stopped. They got him out. He wasn't breathing. He had turned blue. They had to do CPR on him. A couple times during this movie, the kid almost bites it for real. And I can tell you about the other ones later, but that was the first time. If I was this kid, I'd be
I'm
worried,
out.
Worried about the union, the special effects workers on this
well,
movie.
Well, it was Germany, so who knows?
That's true.
Nine!
Exactly, yep. Well, no wonder he became a tattoo, had a tattoo shop when he grew up, man. That's a tough kid.
He was scarred.
He cheated death.
Yeah, no kidding.
So after that, he does finally, well, he goes to meet and finally meets Morla, who kind of looks like E.T., the face of the turtle.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
All right.
Not bad special effects. And I've thought this a couple of times. There are some bad special effects. But for 1984, some of them aren't that bad. And the turtle, I think, is pretty good.
Yeah. When that turtle shell came out, okay, hear me out.
Yeah.
When that rose from the ground and that turtle head popped out of that turtle shell, what did people think? Matt, you go first.
I thought that's a giant turtle.
Christy?
My, what a large turtle.
Dave?
E.T. What did you think, Chris?
My door's behind me.
Perfect timing.
There's no way. It looked... All right, how do I do this? Ready? It looked veiny. It looked pulsating. A little bit of an arch. That's all I'm going to say.
That says it all.
Why do I think that right away?
I don't know.
So turkey neck.
No. Exactly.
That's horrible. This is a children's movie.
Is that what it mean when they say it looked like a turtle head poking out?
No, that's something different.
Oh, okay.
Well, Morla is absolutely no help and is kind of a jerk as well.
Yeah, that was kind of the effect was neat. Yeah. That was really cool. That's one of the few. You said, I agree with you. You said some are good and some are bad. Some really held up for being so much later. I was like, wow, those are really good. Like the Rock Eater, even though the character is like, what the hell is this character? That was a really cool thing. Puppet, costume, whatever it was.
Right.
This was another good one. And I know where we're getting to when we'll get to the point where the ones that aren't bad. But yeah, what was the point of that other than to have a giant, simulate a giant sneeze?
Yeah, it does him no good.
That wasn't right. Snot.
And it doesn't stop him from doing anything either, so it's not like it's an obstacle.
Right. Well, after that, he becomes sad. He's got no answers. He's told that the answer's 10,000 miles away. And he's sinking into the swamps himself when you finally get to meet Falcor, who is probably the most remembered or famous icon of this movie. And he's a luck dragon, whatever that is. What do you think about Falcor? Because to me, this was a deal breaker.
Love him.
Personally, I wanted to get a bumper sticker that says, "My other ride is Falcor."
That's nice. That's nice.
Thank you. I worked on that one.
First thing I thought was a cross between a snake, a dog, and James Hetfield.
It's adorable. I just wish I had one to pet and call it my own.
Okay.
Wonder if they made any stuffed animals out of it. Because, I mean, there are some things that you go, this is a marketing thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a toy waiting to happen.
Plus, he's a little creepy.
Yeah, he keeps like, "I like children."
And wink, wink.
Wink, wink. And Matt, I channeled Chris again because I'm sitting there watching him going, he looks kind of like a pervert. Especially when he scratches behind his ear and he's like, "Oh, that's so good. Oh." Like, oh.
That was disturbing.
Chris, yeah. Get out of my brain.
And his tongue is sticking out.
Yeah.
So you guys saw that when the ears getting scratched, but when the turtle head came out, you thought nothing?
No.
No.
Oh my god, I'm so wrong.
Okay. Well, we knew that.
But in all this stuff happening, we haven't talked about Bastion in a while, who doesn't really do a whole lot for most of the movie. But my question as I'm watching him is, how long is he supposed to be in that attic?
I'm overnight, oh God. I yes, think. Overnight.
It goes day to night to day to night.
Yeah. We discussed that several times in the movie. Well, first of all, let's go back a little bit here. Why does the school have an attic?
And why is the key in a broken freaking case?
Yeah, that was going to be my second. So this has an attic for no reason. And I don't remember if we saw exterior shots of the school, but most schools I know don't have, peaked roofs. So this looked like, a peaked roof attic inside someone's house. And you're right. Why can anyone access it anytime they want?
Somebody changed the lock. If it's broken, buy a new one. Lock it up so you don't can reach in and get it,
the school doesn't have a janitor that can keep that on its keychain? Or that was what was? Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I guess I had. Oh, obviously, I couldn't watch the rest of the movie if I didn't suspend that disbelief. But that was like my really first thing in my head. Why does this school have an attic?
I like to. I wrote down, "Time flies when you're hanging in an attic."
And Gerald McRaney, who was so overbearing at the beginning, isn't trying to find him. I mean,
he told him, "See you. You're on your own.
I guess.
Game my OJ. F off. I'm going to work."
It is at least overnight. I don't know if we're supposed to know exactly how long he's in that attic, but it is at least overnight. And nobody seems to care or try and find him.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they squished a lot in the book.
Okay.
Because the book, he goes back several times.
Oh.
This is not over the course of one day.
Mm-hmm.
This is over the course of, like, days that he skips school. And his father is back, and it kind of gives you, like, the speed version of the book.
Right.
Because there's a lot missing.
So they go back to, he's given this task and he has to, get the answer from the Southern Oracle. That's the only piece of information that Morla would give him. And you're introduced to these gnomes. And I think his name's Engiwook. Is that the name of the gnome with the pointy ears and the one tooth?
I think so.
I mean, it looks like Mater with the one tooth sticking out. I thought the makeup was pretty good on him, though, too. And this, is to me, is one of two times that that they reference, and I know that they were at least written somewhat around the same time, The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
These characters, to me, are Billy Crystal and Carol Kane.
Yes.
It's Miracle Max straight out of Princess Bride. And even the Swamps of Sadness, to me, reminds me of the Fire Swamp from Princess Bride. I looked up Princess Bride, and I think it was written in 1973. So it's not that one's ripping off the other, but there are some similarities between the two movies.
Yeah, and there was another movie reminded me of. It was actually this movie was way after it, so I don't know if it had any inspiration on it. And I may be the only one of the four of us that's seen this movie, and that was The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
I saw it.
That's a great movie.
Okay. Oh yeah, you saw that?
I saw it mainly because Sting's in it, and I love Sting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. At least stylistically, and the whole overcoming of obstacles, that reminded me of it. I wouldn't say it was a direct copy, but it really reminded me of it watching this.
Yeah. Well, I wrote down, I mean, that era of the 80s was pretty big for fantasy. You had The Princess Bride, you had Willow, Legend, Lady Hawk, The Black Cauldron, Labyrinth, Time Bandits. I mean, all these movies came out in the 80s. And I'm not saying they influenced things like the Lord of the Rings movies and Harry Potter, but they were the Harry Potters and Lord of the Rings of that decade. It was just something I noticed.
Right, yeah, okay. I follow that.
So it gets to the this is Chris's moment here. He gets to the first gate.
Kids are still here.
The kids are still here.
Oh, man.
Still at your shot.
I would like to say that the whole interaction with the witch and her husband has one of the best lines in the movie. And Matt laughed because I always say it with the movie.
Yeah.
To the witch.
He was good. They were good.
It's my scientific speciality.
Wow. Yeah.
Matt's like, yeah.
Matt's like, yep, I married her.
I get that 24/7, 365.
That's what I say to you every day. To the witch.
Well, they get to the gate. He gets to the gate, and he gets to see the gate in action fry this night. Probably along with the swamp, my other favorite scene in the movie. I think it's really cool. The special effects are cool. I kind of wonder why they just don't fly over the gate with this dragon.
That's
not in the script. Not in the script.
It's not in the script.
Not in the script.
He won't grow as a character.
That's true. But I thought it was a really cool scene. A lot of tension. You see the dead guy. You know,
what else do you see?
Well,
go ahead, Chris.
Let me before Chris goes on his tirade, because I have one note on this.
Yeah.
In my head. I was actually distracted in the scene, not for the same reason Chris was. I was distracted because they kept referring to them as the Sphinx. Those weren't Sphinx. They were griffins. And that was really bothering me, that they didn't do any... I don't know, research. I just made the assumption that, oh, okay, you know, an animal with a human head is a sphinx. No, these were griffins. But so that was bothering me. And not many things bother me, especially anything historic, because I don't know anything historic. So I guess when I do know something, which is very rare, I like stick to it to make it look like I know what I'm talking about. Maybe. I don't know.
This tangent brought to you by Nerd Alert.
Exactly. So, but I wanted to get that out before, because I know
well, what was this
going to be far more entertaining than my
not, no, it's not. Was this G, Dave? Or just PG?
We have the movie right here, the DV, straight out of the library, because I would not pay a cent for this. This is not rated, according to this. Could that be true?
Video releases can be not rated. So if it has an extra scene, even one extra scene in it, then was released through the MPAA, it would be unrated. So let me see what
it is PG. Is. I have it here. It is PG.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I just wasn't seeing it.
How is German?
That was showing four massive rock hard breasts.
Yeah.
With nipples.
Yeah.
And areola issues. And the kid kept on looking at each one. Tit, 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 tit. Kept on looking at him. And I couldn't see. I don't care if the guy lived or died. I just wanted to see those tits. That's it. So, and it was weird watching it with my 10-year-old daughter and my 6-year-old son. And they were enormous. I'm sorry. I'm not being weird. They were huge.
Your quest would be over there.
Yeah. I would blow up from another way, you know? From the waist down.
Okay.
That was too much for PG. I thought, but that's just me.
That you know that it. That it wouldn't be PG today.
Never. Not
well,
at all.
Well, I mean, they'd have to cut it out probably for PG.
First the big turtle cock, and then those things. You know.
I think your kids went to bed.
They're out of earshot a little bit.
Okay.
They're at least far enough away that you're willing to say these things.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was just there was an un-PG. Matt's
that
right.
Was, yeah, I don't recall seeing that. God, you know, there's a couple other movies I've seen from, like, you know, late 70s, early 80s that are G or PG that had stuff in them that surprised me, but they're all escaping me right now. I should have looked those up. Anyway, sorry.
Well, it's a cool scene.
I went nowhere.
It's a very cool scene, and it even reminded me of that it would come much later, like the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Like
definitely.
The things that he has to do to get in there to get the Grail. It was a cool scene. It was with that and the swamp were my two favorite scenes in the movie.
The only thing that disappointed me was that they didn't try anything different for the last.
Exactly.
For the actual Oracle. It's the exact same thing except white.
Blue.
Yes.
Or well, the triplet, that's right, yeah.
The Southern Oracle.
And it just kind of disappointed me because it was like, oh, they only had enough money for one set of props.
Yeah, that was a little disappointing. Because in between is the second gate, which is just a mirror that he has to look in. I mean, it goes from being incredibly treacherous to looking in a mirror to...
Deja vu.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a letdown. But when he does get to the mirror, he gets to see Bastion in the mirror again. So this is just more clues that Bastion is more than just the reader of this story. But he gets to the Southern Oracle, and he gets the advice that he's been looking for all this time. He's traveled 10,000 miles and almost died several times, and the answer that he gets is, to stop all this from happening, the Empress needs a new name. I don't get that at all.
Yeah, I was a little weak.
And only a human child can give the name.
Oh, yeah.
Duh.
So I feel bad for Atreyu. He's come on this way, and he gets a lame answer.
If he wasn't depressed before.
Yes. So things you know, progress. Moving along here. We haven't talked about the Gmork, which is this wolf-like creature that's sent by the Nothing to kill him. I don't know why they say wolf-like in the thing. To me, it's a wolf. I don't know why it's wolf-like.
Well, it's a talking wolf. I mean, a talking wolf is a far better description than a wolf-like creature.
Yeah. But they actually end up tracking each other down at some point when Atreyu thinks all hope is lost. And the Gmork, who doesn't know that Atreyu is Atreyu, even though he saw him earlier in the movie, I guess he just forgot that was him,
right.
Pretty much sheds light on the whole thing. He tells him that Phantasia is the world of human fantasy, and that people have begun to lose hope and forget their dreams. And the Nothing represents emptiness and despair taking over Phantasia. What does that have to do with the Empress needing a new name? I don't see what these two things have to do with each other.
Because if he gives her a new name, he's given her something. he's become part of the story once he gives her a name.
You are sucking all the joy out of making fun of this movie.
I'm sorry. No, but I mean, I was
here. I'm looking forward to the four of us getting together, ripping on some bad movies, and she's well. Actually, in the book, it gives her a new start of hope.
Page 47,
in purple. That's how you sound to me, by the way.
Like you do?
Yeah, like a 1950s black and white movie scientist, apparently.
Good to anyway. Know. Let me write some notes here.
For therapy.
The all along the thing, because I hadn't remembered the main theme of this movie and the message. I thought the message was delivered early in the movie with the bookkeeper. I thought the main message of the movie was the kids should be reading books. And that would foster their dreams and their imagination. And the bookkeeper guy even says something like, if you're looking for the arcade, it's, you know, down the street. We only have rectangular things in here called books. I thought that was the message of the movie.
Yeah, but you're right. It does like a really strange turn into the message it's trying to convey, which is like it seems that halfway through the movie, it's all about, you know, keeping your imagination, holding on to your dreams, like you said. And then all of a sudden, now the kid has a vested interest. Well, the character has a vested interest in the movie. Now the character has to achieve something or else the story is going to fall apart. That is a very strange storytelling aspect. I'm not going to say it's bad or good. It's just odd. I can't recall that convention being used in many movies I've seen.
And I would assume all this has to do with the book and some problems that they had turning the book into the movie. And we could talk about that a little more later, too. Problems that the author had with the direction that the movie went. And I've also read that the book ends, I mean, the movie ends about halfway. They only get about halfway through the book.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty big, it's a 500 or 600-page book.
Oh, my God. I don't think I've read 500 or 600 pages in my life.
It keeps going and going and going. Kind of like The Wizard of Oz. It reminded me a lot of that.
It's just strange. I mean, it went from being what I thought was, you know, read, kids, stop playing Atari, because that would have been what it would have been at that time. And it turns into how humans are apathetic. And when I know when I was little, I didn't know what apathy was. And it's pretty heavy-handed for a kid's movie. But that's the way it is. So he encounters his Gamork, and they have this fight, and it's very boring. Nothing happens.
Fast.
He charges at him, and it's about over. And this is one of the other times the kid almost died.
That was really disappointing. Wait. Go ahead, Dave. Tell that story first.
Well, maybe this is why it is boring. Apparently the mechanical wolf charges at the kid. The thing struck him in the head and hit him in the eye. And depending on how exaggerated these things are, they were concerned that the kid might lose his eye.
Oh, my God.
They really only did it that one time because they were concerned about this thing killing somebody. So maybe that's why that scene is pretty anticlimactic.
You'll poke your eye out.
That explains that. Definitely kind of explains the statement I was going to make, is that why, you know, it seemed like such a build up because that, any other times you saw the whatever it is, the dwarf, whatever his name was.
That's Tim Conway.
Yeah, I know. the big bad wolf. He was like in the shadows lurking him. So you're like, okay, now this is going to be a spectacular fight. And it's like jump, rock, done. I'm like, that's it? But now, with that bit of knowledge, that kind of makes sense.
That could be it. I'm not sure. But this is what it said. And I feel bad for this kid.
No kidding.
He's going through torture. There was another one, too. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But it was like three times this kid almost like lost an appendage making this movie.
Jeez.
So after that, you get to see the ivory tower. And Atreyu thinks he's failed. And you get this speech from the childlike empress. That he did not fail because you brought him with you, is the quote she gives him, and him being Bastion, that he's shared this whole adventure. Bastion was reading about Atreyu, and this is my hugest question, I think, of all. She tells him that this is the never-ending story. And the never-ending story is that while Bastion was reading about Atreyu, others were reading about Bastion. I don't know what kind of book those kids were reading, but it must have been the most boring book in the history of books.
If you're reading about Bastion, that book has got to suck.
Yeah. He's chased by bullies and he hides in an attic. That's what you're reading.
He ate an apple, core and all, which was disgusting.
Yeah, true.
And he lit a couple candles, and I think he threw the book. That was like the height of his action sequence.
Hmm.
Why are there candles in that attic?
Yeah, that was still a very dusty, dry attic.
Ooh.
Hey, it took me enough to accept the fact that he was in the attic of the school.
Yeah. Why? This just blew my mind. The name of the movie is A Neverending Story, and the Neverending Story means that other people are reading about Bastion.
Yes.
And it goes on and on. And who's reading that book? No kid would read a book about a kid sitting in an attic reading a book.
Well, the sad part is who's the next on the chain reading a book about that person?
Yes. A kid reading a book about a kid reading a book.
A book, yeah.
So it goes on and on. But she tells him, you know, that she needs a name. And Bastion has to give her a name. And there's this storm raging. And the window opens. And he goes over the window and he shouts out the name. And I would give anybody $500.
I actually know it.
Well, I know what it is from looking online.
IMDb, yeah.
There's no way you can tell what he says from listening to that.
Exactly.
On the movie.
That is so funny because I was like, that's my biggest point, and that's I think I can safely say that was Christy's biggest point. So go ahead and say what we were talking about. I won't talk the whole time.
I'll let you talk.
So you go ahead and tell what we were talking about.
Calm down, guys.
You'd think it was so damned important you'd be able to understand it. It's a crux part of the movie.
This is the whole point of Bastion reading the book at this point, at least as far as I understand, and you have no idea unless you got subtitles or closed caption on. I don't have a clue what he said.
Bye-bye. That's all you hear.
And then after doing research like we did, you find out the name, and it makes even less sense. What did you get, Chris?
I just forget. It's like Moon Lily or something. I forget.
It's Moonchild.
That's it. Moonchild. Yeah.
Moonchild?
That's what I got.
I said Tamara Lee or something like that.
Moonchild.
Yeah.
So were his parents hippies?
Yeah.
Like Major Dad doesn't look like a hippie. He looks like a jerk.
A dick.
Yeah.
No, Bastion, you got to get your head out of the clouds.
But his mother's name is Moonchild. So you can wonder why a kid whose mother's name is Moonchild has his head in the clouds.
Tell me that picture of that woman that looked like she was out of a Sears catalog from the 1950s had to be Moonchild.
Yeah.
That was his mother's name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he named it. Was that in the movie that I missed that part?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because he says, about my mother, point, she started, had a beautiful name.
I started trailing off. And it's like, is this done yet?
Very strange. Very strange.
But that is the second part of the film that someone teared up a little bit and cried.
What part?
You cried at that?
When
you didn't understand what he was saying?
No, when the queen girl's looking at the camera yelling and crying.
Bastion, call my name.
That's it. And I got teary-eyed, man, and I said, turn this off.
Because of the little girl?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
I can't stand to see a girl cry.
Does explain why you are such a good father, but...
I am so gay. I don't care. I cried at that scene.
You had insulted in the same sentence.
And my son, 5 years old, turned to me and he goes, are you crying? I don't even acknowledge him.
He's 15 and he turns to you and calls you a pussy.
Cowboy up, Dad. It's a never-ending story. Yeah. Jesus.
Shut up or shut up, Dad.
That's two times in this movie I cried.
Wow. I didn't cry at that part. I didn't even come close to crying or get teary-eyed because I was so pissed off that I couldn't understand what the name was. I was really mad. Because
he
I
said,
just,
Frank!
I was like, this is the only... Now at this point, this is the only thing I need to see to, you know, feel like this journey is concluded, and I have no idea what he said.
Well, what do you think back in the day when we were all kids and there's no internet and all that crap? Like, what did people say
really frustrating.
As they walked out of the movie theater? What the hell did he say? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Read the book, I guess.
I would ask for my money back.
$2.
I want my $2.
Yeah. And quarters. We can play Shinobi.
Shinobi. Well, that pretty much is it. I mean, there's one grain of sand left from Fantasia that he can wish on and recreate everything, and everybody's just fine. And that's pretty much it. But... there's one other thing that happens at the end that really bothers me in general about any movie. He scares the bullies on Falcor's back, and it's great and all that.
I love that part.
And the camera's panning up into the sky, and out of nowhere, a voiceover happens. I hate it in movies that don't start with voiceovers, don't have voiceovers through the whole movie, and just suddenly have a voiceover at the end to explain everything that you just saw. It's the laziest, cheapest thing ever in history of movies. And we get this voiceover that says, you know, Bastion had many other adventures, but that is another story. what a cheap way to end that movie. It's called The Never Ending Story, and it clearly ends, but you get this guy voiceover, and it just bothers me.
I have one comment, because I think Christy's got the other comment. I have one comment about that ending. Although the ending, I didn't really like the whole Falcor attacking the Falcor being on Earth is a problem I have with, and I'll let Christy expand on that. However, that scene of him going from the Wish to standing on sitting on Falcor going, yeah, like finally explains about 24 cartoon/sitcom references that I never got until I saw that scene.
he never got the part from Robot Chicken where they have the never-ending party.
Family Guy did it. Family Guy did it. I think South Park did it. I never got that reference until last night.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
At least something good came out of this.
Yeah, something good came out.
So, I mean, when that happens, does that happen in the book, Chrissy? Does Falcor come and scare the bullies? That's just the movie ending.
I think it does. But it happens a lot less suddenly. Mm-hmm. The thing I was telling Matt about the book is that the neat thing is they printed it in two different colors.
Right.
And everything that's in the real world is green, and then everything in Fantasia is red. And as you get closer to the end and he says the name and everything, it all turns red. And the whole second part, which is supposed to be the second movie, everything's in red, but little pops of green come through. So, and it's a visually interesting book, but it doesn't have any stop to it. Like, it's interesting that they chose, I guess they had to choose this second, but the overlap wasn't that immediate that he comes in there right away. It was later in the book. They kind of smooshed a little bit from later in.
It's a smoosh.
Smoosh.
The Himalayan. So the other, were you going to mention the part we're talking about? Or you actually brought it up and then you made me think. I didn't even notice this and she makes me think about it.
What?
Where is he when he gets on Falcor? Because you assume he's in Fantasia. Then all of a sudden he's in Munich, I think is the city we're in. It's like, how did he get to, where did this whole transition take place? Where did he get on Falcor? On
it's just
Earth
kinda
or
like
in Fantasia?
They're trying to force the happy ending.
Yeah.
There you go, Chris. Open door for you. There.
You're not going to comment? The kids are still in the next room.
Yes.
No, I saw nothing wrong with it. I mean, I was trying to wipe the tear stuff from my eyes at that part. Oh, jeez. You know?
It's like they're trying to hurry through and just, okay, we're done. All the fun stuff's done.
Right.
And he went on to wish more stuff, so go home and buy the second one.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should talk about the book a little bit. I mean, Christy's the authority here with the book, but I mean, everything that I've read about the book says the same thing. Michael Ende, the author, hated this movie, and he sued the production company to get his name taken off of it.
Wow! So it's like Lawnmower Man.
He actually wanted to shut down the entire production. Sued, it didn't work. The best that he could do was get his name taken off the beginning of the movie, and his name only appears in the credits at the end, I think.
Okay.
But that was he was very unhappy with all this. And we haven't also pointed out that the actual name of this movie is not The Never Ending Story. It's Die Endliche Geschichte.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Well, as far as I
know, but
I tried to look, and you discovered that on your like first IMDb search for it.
Yes,
yes, me too. Because I wanted to see where the heck I knew that kid from Avatar, whatever his name was.
Yeah, and you're like, what the hell is this in the delicious?
Yeah, yeah, that was odd.
And I saw something on the DVD. I watched the trailer. I noticed something pretty cool in the trailer, actually. When he's in the bookstore in the trailer, and the guy pulls back the newspaper, and you see the book there with the Orin on it. The name of the book is in German in the trailer.
Oh,
So that must be a scene from the German version of the movie that they put in the American movie.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was kind of neat.
Now, what's strange is that if they wanted the sequel made so bad, man, I just noticed this tonight while we're getting ready, is that the sequel didn't come out till 16 years later.
Right. That is strange. And there was a third one and then a cartoon series, I think.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
I saw them all at FYE, actually, last night, the cartoon series.
Yeah?
For 1, 2, and 3 for sale, yeah.
And they all have Falcor. I mean, it's like he on the cover of all these. He's like the most recognizable thing from all this.
As atrocious as 2 seems to be, from what you know, I've read and see people posting about, it appears 3 is even more so. Because it's that got 2.7 out of 10 star rating on IMDb.
I don't think Part 3 came out in theaters. I think that was like
straight to video.
With VHS or something.
Did 2 even come out in theaters?
Yeah, 2 did, because I saw it in the theaters. I saw it at our theater, actually.
Okay.
I don't know. Again, I don't know why, but I watched it.
It's interesting that you say that, you know, how the movie was received. This movie gets actually very good ratings on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, people really like this movie.
Yeah.
It's not like something that people are poo-pooing, sort of like we are, but we haven't had our reviews yet. But it does well. It holds up for other people anyway, which I thought was kind of interesting. We also haven't mentioned, other than at the beginning, that this is directed by a very famous director, Wolfgang Petersen. Oscar nominee for Das Boot, and has made some really, in my opinion, excellent action movies.
There's quite a few on the list that I are in some of my top 50 movies.
Sure. In the Line of Fire, Air Force One, The Perfect Storm, Troy. I mean,
Troy, not so much.
Like all of these movies, but it's not like this guy's a hack. This guy's well respected.
You gotta start somewhere, I guess, you know?
I wonder if this is like a Spike Jonze type of thing where it's like, how old is this book?
I don't know.
I'm looking towards our Wikipedia of children's books.
I don't know. See, I read the book after I saw the movie.
I was going to say, I wonder if it's something that... Because I know Spike Jonze is the one who manned the helm for getting Where the Wild Things Are because of how much he loved it as a kid. I wonder if Wolfgang Petersen had the same thing about this book.
And being it a German book and him being a German, it probably meant something to him.
Right.
That's the other thing I was going to bring up. I have a friend.
Like David Hasselhoff.
Yes.
What?
David Hasselhoff. Oh, Germans have great taste in entertainment. I have a very good friend who lives in Germany. Not only lives in Germany, he is German. His name's Henning. And I emailed him just out of curiosity. He's our age. Just to see if he could speak for all of his countrymen and say, how do Germans view this movie? Is this like their Star Wars? I mean, is this like their, you know, their crowning achievement in film? And he basically said no.
He said 9.
No, he said
9.
he said the book more so than the movie. I think the book is more beloved than the movie. He said the Germans are more interested in watching American movies, and people don't really care about it. I even saw there's a thing where you can go to some kind of theme park and ride on Falcor's back.
I saw that. I did see that.
But from the German's perspective, which is just one person, but he happens to be our age, this is not a big deal in Germany. So he felt comfortable saying that in general.
Well, I see now that it was published in 1979. So that, I mean, Wolfgang Blitzer, what his name is, Wolfgang Petersen, was he 41. So he'd have been late 30s, 38. So this is not a childhood dream of his come true, so that argument goes right out the window.
Yeah, and he had just done Das Boot and been nominated for an Oscar, and I don't know, it's strange, but I don't know. Should we talk about the song?
Yeah, I guess we need to address
it. Yeah, do it.
You want to talk about the song? The song is it's a character unto itself, I'm telling you. And starting with talking about Le Mal. So, Chris, what are your memories of Le Mal? Do you have any?
I just love the song. It's like a major 80s song. It's like something.
You really like that song?
It's like when you hear it. Yeah. It's like major 80s. Shy, shy.
Of this song? I thought you meant the theme song.
Shy, shy. It's like a great 80s. It's like It reminds me of like Aha kind of thing or something.
Okay, this song I can stand. I thought you meant the theme song.
Well, I did, but this is. I mean, I think the whole story of Lamal seems kind of funny. Like they had this one hit, Kaja Gugu, and I went on and looked on about Lamal. They had this one hit and they fired him.
Yep, over the phone.
Right. And they seemed like they were about to do some kind of tour with Duran Duran, which was like in the 80s, the Rolling Stones. So they seemed like they were about to do something. They fired this guy and never did anything else again.
And then close.
Well, they had that VH1 series, The Reunited.
Yes.
And they actually brought back the members of Kaja Gugu.
Was there animosity between Lamal and the other members?
A little bit, because he was like, he still, to this day, didn't know why they fired him.
Wow.
They were like, well, our manager told us we should, so we did. And that was probably not a great decision.
No. And
because we all had to get real jobs.
Yes. And he has this thing going on with his hair, which I love. I mean, you see the pictures of him. He's got the long hair in the back and the spiky top. It's just perfect, yeah. 80s hair. It was really like a precursor to, like, the Kate Gosselin soccer mom hair helmet.
You're right.
Like, so he really spawned something there, and he deserves credit for that. But this song, other than Falcor, is probably the most memorable thing about the movie. If you mention this to anybody, they start singing the song.
Yes, everyone knows. I even knew the song and had never seen the movie before.
Yeah, it's just...
I don't know if it's because of airplay or because of the way it's ingrained in pop culture, because like I was saying, those, you know, those half dozen or dozen references to it on TV, the song is always playing when it happens, so I knew the song, at least the stanza of the song.
Well, I've printed out the words here.
Oh boy, this is being interesting.
I'm just handing them to Chris.
What you see in her face of your dreams, make believe I'm everywhere. Look at the big blue line. This makes no sense.
No, the lyrics make zero sense. There's something in there about a rainbow. There's no rainbow in the movie.
There's no crying in baseball.
There is a grain of sand.
There is. You're right about that.
I had the sheet music.
Oh, that's right.
Do you still have it?
Yes, I do.
Is Lamal on the cover?
Yes, he is.
Oh, my God.
I mean, Kate Gosselin?
Yes, Kate Gosselin's on the cover.
Okay. But the song is probably the most memorable thing. If people will start singing it, they don't know the words. You just remember the
never ending story. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Well, that's how this whole thing came up to do this movie first. Because I remember we said, "Chris, do you pick the movie?" And Chris sarcastically goes, "Never ending story."
No, it was a little higher. It was like, "Never ending story."
I love this movie.
And I paid $1.29 for this. I'd like to point out on iTunes, this Neverending Story theme song.
The song?
Yes. It wasn't even your regular 99 cents for a song.
Oh,
it
really?
Was $1.29. I don't know what nerve they have jacking you up on Lamal.
Worth every cent.
Because there's a whole resurgence of 80s music. There's like a whole big section on iTunes of
if there's
all
a
the 80s
to be
music.
Made, Apple will find it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I have the techno version. It's much more fun.
Yes, you said. Well,
how is that different?
It's the same thing.
It's a lot faster. And it's faster.
And you exercise to this?
Yes, I do. Okay. It is really good for step aerobics.
Well, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, I've left you speechless now.
Yeah.
I just found a fascinating picture, still shot from the movie, that was brought up like in the first 10 minutes of our discussion. Apparently, Chris was right. He did see some people from Star Wars. There's a
no
shot
way.
Of all the pop culture characters they put around that thing, that stand. I'm sending the link to you guys right now.
I told you.
It's not just the ones you saw. There's a few others, too. And sure enough, they're certainly in there.
All right, I just hit it. Where'd it go?
Yeah, you're asking Chris to operate a
computer. Don't ask me. I can't even spell CD.
In fact, if you lose us, don't be surprised.
How do you spell CD? Q7. Ah, damn it.
I saw it pop up, and then what happens? It's gone now.
It's gone? All right, let me send it again.
All right, I see it here.
All you have to do is click on it.
Just click that blue thing.
I did. Oh, wait. Oh, it's coming.
Click on it does not mean play with yourself.
Are you in this room? Can you see me? It's going. It's loading, whatever. Yeah, I think I clicked it too many times.
Jeez.
You have 18 windows pop up.
Wait, what is that?
Yes, I was right.
What do you see?
Right here is Ewoks.
No.
C-3PO. E.T.
No.
I missed Mickey Mouse. Yeah, right here. Gumby. I missed that guy. Yoda. Yeah. E.T.
And what are these? They were put in... This is in the movie?
They're put in the... Yeah, in post-production to fill in the gaps. And I imagine it's one of those private jokes from the post-production editors. I want to see if anyone ever noticed these guys.
I did.
How do they get away with that and not get sued?
I don't have that answer. German? They're German? I don't know.
They're German.
You don't mess with German.
Nine!
Well, one other thing we can talk about is maybe the influence that this movie had or what it was influenced by. To me, more it's what was it influenced by.
Yeah.
It was absolute. This is 1984. All three Star Wars movies have been out.
Yep.
And even more influence, I think, than Star Wars was maybe Jim Henson's influence on this. The Dark Crystal. Falcor is straight out of Jim Henson. I mean, I don't know.
I was really surprised that Jim Henson wasn't part of this, because the first real big effect I remember seeing was the Rock Eater, and that looked like a Henson thing to me.
The eyes.
The
eyes looked a lot like a
Henson. Yeah, you're right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, but no. So, yeah, I definitely think there was some Henson influence and definitely some Star Wars or Lucas influence. Was Willow before or after this?
After, I think.
Was? Really? Okay. Because Willow kind of reminded me. No, you're right. Yeah. So, all right, not Willow so much, but the other, all the other Lucas stuff. Now, what it influenced? I mean, I don't think it influenced directly anything big, but, man, like I said, I've seen it in referenced as a joke in a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably more of a punchline at this point, but
yeah,
I did list all those 80s fantasy movies. I can't sit here and say which ones came first and which ones came second, but it seems like the 80s was a big decade for fantasy.
Everybody's trying to escape.
I guess Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Wait.
Well,
that's the best Ronald Reagan impression I ever heard. Well,
now do Ronald Reagan on a helicopter. Being chased by Hannibal Lecter.
Watching a pod race.
Well, boom, 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 boom.
You nailed it. Well, maybe we're at the point now where we could give our reviews.
Sure.
The way we're going to do this on this installment and hopefully future installments is that we would give our review in the decade that the movie came out. In this case, it's 1984. And then our review of our current time. So, I'll go first if nobody wants to. I think in 1984 I mentioned this movie wasn't going to fly with me because I was a George Lucas Steven Spielberg guy. So in 1984 I would not have liked this movie, and I think I did see it and I wasn't interested in it because it didn't have Jedis in it and it didn't have even Ewoks in it.
Yes, it did. If you see that little photo there, you'll see two Ewoks in the right-hand corner.
I still don't believe that's true. I think that's doctored. So in 1984, out of 5 stars, I think I would have given this probably about 2. It wouldn't have been something that I would have watched. It wouldn't have been something that I was interested in at all. Seeing it now, and I was actually able to see this on the big screen not that long ago, probably about a year ago. Local movie theater shows classic children's movies on Saturday morning. And I took my son. He's a Star Wars dork like I am. He was very affected by the movie. Now, he was little, but we ended up having to leave the theater.
Wow.
He was very scared by the Gmork. And I think just the tone of the movie. There is a very creepy tone to the movie that I don't remember from when I was little. It's very spooky. It's very creepy. And my son picked up on it. The Gmork scared the crap out of him, and we had to leave. Seeing it again, I liked it a lot more, and I think I would actually rate it a little higher. So I'm going to say 3 out of 5 stars for 2010.
Okay.
Well, I would say probably when I was 11 in 84. I probably, knowing how gay I am now, I was probably gay back then. I not perfect, probably 4 stars, I would think, from 84. Because I'm I'm the same boat. I mean, Star Wars, indie, and that was about it and all, you know. Watching it with my 10-year-old daughter and 6-year-old son. And she watched the whole thing, and I cried twice. I have to give it 5 stars in 2010.
5 stars?
Because I am just gay. The older I get gayer and gayer. I watch it just again in 10 years, and I'll give it 8 stars.
Wow. Man.
I love Falcor.
Wolfgang Peterson right now is like just... Yeah, yeah.
Delect the movie. I probably would have given it a 4 when it first came out. I was really into those movies. I watched anything that had to do with girly science fiction, not like Star Wars, but anything that was about fantasy or, you know, escapism, I watched it. I saw pretty much anything else that Barrett Oliver did, including...
Which one was Barrett Oliver?
He was Bastion.
Bastion, okay.
But he did, like, Daryl and...
Oh, that's right.
My Hero with Dabney Coleman, and I was really into those movies. So, I probably would have given it a 5 when it first came out. When I was a kid,
yeah.
I'd probably give it about a 3 now.
Okay.
Just because the effects bother me. Falcor's mouth not moving right, but I've been spoiled now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't see it. I think had I seen it in 84, probably would have been at about a 3 because it certainly was not the kind of story I liked at that age. Though there was probably enough visually to make me watch the whole movie. And now, having seen it for the first time, just less than about 24 hours ago, I still stick with a 3 because, and probably for the same reason, because there's some, for effects being done in 84, some are really good, some are really bad. I mean, green screen and chroma key or whatever they used for to rotoscope Falcor flying just wasn't perfected, and that was hard to do because he was like fluffy and whatnot, you know, had all those hairs and whatnot flying through there, so that was tough. And plus, like Christy said, the mouth not moving drove me nuts. But the fact that it did have some effects that really impressed me all this year later, that's where the 3 stars are coming from, not necessarily from the story or any other reason.
Well, great. So I'd say on the whole, pretty good reviews for a movie that's you know, several years old. I'd say that between the four of us, we'd say that this movie definitely does still hold up. And for Matt, it holds up for him the first time because he hasn't seen it. But so the NeverEnding Story gets a good grade here on our inaugural episode of the Greaties, the great 80s movie debate. So thank you for listening. And please tune in again for future episodes of other great classic 80s movies. And for other great podcast, please go to neozaz.com. And we thank you for listening and see you later.
Bye.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
When a luck dragon has to pee, do they just pee in the air or do they stop?
I love dog movies.
Oh, that's going to be bad for you. You're going to cry a lot in Turner and Hooch, won't you?
Yeah.
A little bit.
We're going to have to add a new rating. How many hankies did it take you?
Yes, you know what? That's a definite. I would definitely do that because I cry a lot.
Yep.